Billy Boskovsky and the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra in the music of Strauss. Tonight, a transcription by Alfred Reed of that work. What did we decide? The pish posh, the trish trash, the talking trash. The Jim Batchelor joining us in studio here this morning. He is going to be leading the members of the Wind Symphony and Symphony Band tonight in concert, and the Symphony Band will open with that in the transcription by Alfred Reed. Lyrics to it, words to it that I did not know. Yes. This is an interesting story beyond the pish posh.
Yes. Well, the most often translation of the title is chit chat, and the lyrics are that, you know. It works better in German because of the short percussive nature of the of the text, wie geht's, wie steht's, and so on, roughly translated, how's things, how's tricks, haven't seen you in a while, not bad, not good, life must go on, there is nothing else for it, where are you going, where have you been, I've got no time, and so on. The Trish Trash, as often as not, shows up on the Vienna Philharmonic's New Year's Eve program, and when they perform it, very often the Vienna Boys Choir will be up in the loft singing those words. And so it's as light and airy as a thing as you'll find.
And it opens the program tonight, along with three other pieces that the Symphony Band, and then following that, the Wind Symphony, to play works of Persichetti and also Julius Fusik and Aaron Perrin.
Perrin.
Yeah, it is. So let's kind of go through this. We've talked about the Strauss, but some of these other pieces maybe not as familiar. And the approach of Symphony Band versus Wind Symphony, does that influence works that you program? What things are written actually originally for this type of instrumentation or transcriptions? What are the things you look for when you're putting together a program like this?
Well, first, I should say that the principal conductor of the Symphony Band this semester is our graduate assistant, Corey Jollis. John Campbell, our director of bands, and I work with him to develop the program. The Symphony Band and Wind Symphony are comprised largely of music majors, and so to a certain extent, the personnel and their background and their ability level will determine what we program. The Wind Symphony being more or less second in line in among our three music major ensembles, and then the Symphony Band being comprised of the younger students for the most part. With both ensembles, we try to program a broad variety of literature, as much original music, art music, for wind band as possible. But every now and then, you know, the appropriate transcription. And with the Strauss, for example, this is a transcription by Alfred Reed, as you noted, who's an accomplished composer in his own right, and who was adept at transcribing the music of Strauss. All Strausses, as it turns out.
Who else do we look at in that line of sort of the heavy hitters, as you will, of those that do the transcriptions? Obviously, we could go through a list of composers, but would Reed be at the top of or close to the top of the list also as one who does the transcriptions for instruments like this?
A good deal of transcriptions, and certainly Reeds are as good or better than anyone else. The older transcriptions, and of course, it was a long time coming to get composers of the first rank to write original music for wind band, but going back, there are the band works by Holst and Vaughan Williams, and then ultimately, you know, Persichetti comes along and starts to write for winds. For the longest time, with the exception of marches and waltzes and novelty pieces, the larger significant works on a band program at the beginning of the 20th century, for example, would have been transcriptions. Among those who have been really terrific at that, Lucien Caillé wrote scads of transcriptions. And Eric Lightson is another name that comes to mind. A number of transcriptions by Robert Russell Bennett are out there alongside his original works for band. Of course, Bennett was, in addition to being a composer, more than anything else, Bennett was an orchestrator. He was Richard Rodgers' principal orchestrator. And
that's pretty good company to be in.
Yeah. Well, those of us who play French horn, for example, truly loved playing Rodgers and Hammerstein works in the pit because Bennett would take Rodgers' wonderful tunes and then create lovely sweeping horn counter melodies to go along with. So, and Al Reed was certainly among the top echelon of transcribers.
Jim Batchelor from the CMU School of Music conducting tonight along with the Wind Symphony and Symphony Band and grad student Corey Jalas. And you may well know his name as the leader also of the Central Michigan University Marching Chips, which in and of itself is a monumental task to take on each year. But in this downtime from the marching band, obviously there is much to be done. And the other works on this program, this second piece called Aquarium, what can you tell us about this?
Aquarium is was the third major work for band by composer Johann de Meij, studied at The Hague, trombonist and composer of music for brass. His first big work for band was his Symphony No. 1, which is based on The Lord of the Rings. And de Meij writes highly programmatic music, but does it in a way that engages the audience with contemporary sounds and styles. A lot of major chords moving one to the next. This particular piece is a three-movement suite. And introduces ideas, musical motives that he's assigned to different types of tropical fish. So in the first movement, the neon tetra, one of the most common aquarium fishes, you know, those of us that had aquariums when we were kids, and one of the first kinds of fish we'd buy is the neon because they're cheap. And you can put a million of them in the tank.
Exactly,
and, you know,
yes.
The neon tetra theme that he establishes in the first movement kind of winds its way throughout the suite. There's a, in the second movement, there are these fidgety little bass melody that moves around that represents electric eels. And then angelfish swim onto the scene with a sort of slowly evolving, elegant chord clusters. The third movement proceeds immediately thereafter with a bouncing, galloping march that represents the seahorse. And then there's a more regal counter melody to that march, which represents a zebrafish. Those are introduced individually, and then they're woven together. And then finally, the neon tetra theme comes on back in and winds the thing together. Surrounding all of that, the third movement starts, it breaks away from the second movement without interruption, and it starts with these little two-note interruptions by muted brass and xylophone, which represents a pair of guppies. And then the instrumentation expands as the guppies multiply, as guppies
will do.
As guppies are given to do. And they sort of...
Do you have enough players? Is it a long enough piece where you've got enough by the end to represent the rate that the guppies would accumulate in the tank?
Yeah. Well, and by the end of the third movement, he's brought the neon tetra, the theme back, and all of the themes work together to form a sort of elegant waltz that takes it to a pretty dramatic conclusion. It's something
it's
that
very nice that the guppies are allowing the tetras to hang with them. I think that's a noble musical and noble idea. Thank you to both for coexisting so nicely.
Yes, indeed.
Concert time is tonight at 7:30 at the Staples Family Recital Hall. On the first half of the program, the Symphony Band, the works of Strauss, as we've talked about, and Johann Demange, and then this piece from David Holsinger on a hymn song of Philip Bliss. One could almost slide and say Philip Glass. No, we're talking about Philip Bliss,
yes.
His music, and this piece.
Yeah, Philip Bliss was an established composer of gospel hymn music, he was inspired by the text of a poem that was written by a financier named Horatio Spafford. He was a successful attorney in the late part of the 19th century in Chicago. And the Chicago Fire of 1871 led to almost complete financial ruin for him. There was an economic downturn that followed, which caused him to make plans to take his family and move back to Europe. And he had to deal with a number of issues, and so sent his wife and daughters on ahead. While they were crossing the Atlantic, the ship, the Ville du Havre that they were sailing on, collided with another ship and sank. And so you can imagine, at the time, no internet, no cell phone. All there are news reports and wire reports, really. And you find out that the ship that your wife and four daughters is on has sunk, and so you're waiting for any news. And the only way news came from across the Atlantic was that the passengers were given, those who survived were given the opportunity to send very short wires. And so Spafford received a two-word note from his wife, saved alone. When he sailed himself then to reconnect with his wife, as the ship passed where the first ship had gone down, he was inspired to write this this poem that became the popular hymn tune, It Is Well With My Soul. It's a song of hope coming out of tragedy. And it's an inspiring story, and it's an extraordinarily beautiful hymn.
Are these things that you share with the students as these works are, the rehearsals are beginning and then moving forward, to give them that sense of why the music may sound the way it does, or the some of the emotion that you want to be able to bring out of them and that you want them to put into their playing, to know all of what is the essence behind what was written and why?
Yes, we do. We talk about what goes into each piece. We look at the musical elements, and certainly if there are programmatic elements, we talk about those as well. And in this case, this particular piece is being conducted tonight by John Campbell, our director of bands, and he has shared all of this with the ensemble as they've prepared the piece. The composer of the band work, David Holsinger, a band conductor, band composer, and church organist, a profession that he shared with Persichetti. David is a prolific composer for band music, and of hymn song settings, sort of crossing his two avocations, church organist and band composer. He set Philip Bliss's hymn tune as a chorale prelude, and so there are some additional there's an arpeggiated motive that a melodic motive that winds its way through the hymn tune as it develops, and it's a piece that's been so well accepted in the band community and loved by audiences. The U.S. Air Force Band was inspired to perform the work as part of the National Memorial Service for the crew of the Space Shuttle Columbia in 2003. So it's an impressive bit of composition, and it's an inspiring setting of this poignant hymn tune.
the Symphony Band and Wind Symphony in concert tonight at 7:30, Staples Family Recital Hall, music.cmish.edu for all of the information. Jim Batchelor joining us in studio here today around Mosaic on listener-supported WCMU, a service of Central Michigan University. The first half of the program with the Symphony Band wraps up with a work that, well, doesn't seem that long ago, perhaps, to you and I, 1973. That's ancient history to the young people that will be performing it tonight. But what can you tell us about Xerxes by John Mackey?
Well, now, yeah, John is a young guy.
Keep reminding the students of that he's a young guy.
He is a young guy. He's also just the most energetic person you'll ever have the pleasure of meeting. I've been lucky to spend some time talking with John and watching him work and working with our ensembles here at CMU and also in a couple of other situations with honor bands and so on. Xerxes is, which John completed in 2010, is typical Mackey. He was asked to write a concert march. Well, he doesn't do anything in an ordinary way, and so he sort of set out to write an anti-march. You know, he looks at marches as being, as he says it, in some peppy major key. He set it in the ABA form of a march, first theme, second theme, and back to the first theme. But his use of sort of non-traditional rhythmic and harmonic materials makes it sound pompous and angry, or at least that's what his wife, Abby Everett Jacques, took from it. Abby names all of John's works after they're done. He writes a piece and then plays the MIDI rendering of the piece for her. She said, well, that sounds like, for example, is a piece that we did here a couple of years ago that John wrote for a National Honor Band. When Abby heard it, she says, you know, that sort of sounds like Morse code in spots. And there are gaps in the thing. It's almost like a secret code that's had things left out. Let's call it redacted. And so that's the name of that work. John, in addition to his works for band, has written original works for any number of media, and has written specific works for as broad a group of commissioners as the Alvin Ailey Dance Company, the National Band Association, the Blue Devils Drum and Bugle Corps, a highly competitive drum corps that competes in the summertime, and the Minnesota Orchestra, and the 2004 United States Olympic Synchronized Swim Team commissioned a work for him from him for their program.
So, somebody that gets around in a good way.
Yes, that's absolutely.
Pretty impressive. All of that on the concert with the Central Michigan University Symphony Band on the first half of their program tonight. Following information, the intermission, we shall say, the Wind Symphony takes the stage, and they will be concluding with a very familiar march and opening. I believe what you said is before we sat down that as you blend the familiar with the newer works or the challenging things, that one of those that might not be as familiar, but a brilliant work to present not only to an audience but to the students, this symphony by Vincent Persichetti.
Yeah, it's, you know, to be clear, this isn't new music by any stretch. It's the symphony was written in 1956, but Persichetti's music is marked by harmonies, especially that young students, in particular, wouldn't necessarily be exposed to. A lot of pandiatonicism, a lot of polychordalism, but set across traditional forms. Persichetti was among the first composers of the first rank to write major works specifically for the concert band, and to do so in a in traditional large forms. This is a four movement symphony. Formally, it's similar to a Beethoven symphony. First movement starts with a sonata allegro movement that starts with an adagio introduction in the style of a French overture, and the second movement is a strophic song form movement. Third movements of classical symphonies could either be bouncing around in a sort of triple meter or skipping along in a quick duple meter. The third movement of the Persicetti Symphony superimposes both of those onto the form and uses that to sort of develop the little themes that are involved. And then the last movement is a free rondo form. Even though he's using those classical forms, the materials that he uses and the way he orchestrates his symphony is a little bit different. For example, somebody that's performing a sonata allegro movement of Mozart or J.C. Bach or Beethoven would look to ways to alter the first theme of the exposition when it comes back in the recapitulation later in the movement. In Persicetti's symphony, the recap starts with the rhythmic motive and an outline of the original theme melody, but presented by unpitched percussion, initially with a set of tom-toms. He uses the timpani very effectively. In fact, he uses the percussion in a way that no one had before him, really, in applying traditional forms to the band. And so there's a combination of the familiar and the unfamiliar with this, which is a nice way to introduce music of the middle part of the 20th century, both to students and to audiences. Persicetti himself, like David Holsinger, a church organist. In fact, he became principal organist at the Arch Street Presbyterian Church in Philadelphia when he was 16 years old. The second movement of the symphony is an expanded setting of his own hymn tune, Round Me Falls the Night, from the first volume of his Hymns and Responses for the Church Year. It's a delightful presentation of a beautiful tune, harmonized in modalities that are going to seem a little different to the average listener. Persicetti himself, in addition to the impact that he's had on the band world, his own students have had an effect on American popular culture. Philip Glass was among his composition students, as well as Peter Schickele, who's a little different bent there, in his persona of P.D.Q. Bach. Kenneth Fuchs is a modern composer. Ken's music, his piano concerto, Spiritualist, Poems of Life, and Glacier Rush, were recorded by the London Symphony last year, which just won the Grammy a week or so ago for Best Classical Compendium. So Persicetti's influence continues.
All in good company, certainly.
Yeah.
You said that this this concert tonight by the Wind Symphony, we're speaking with Jim Batchelor, who from Central Michigan University School of Music, he'll be conducting the symphony band on the first half of the program. It starts at 7:30, Staples Family Recital Hall, and again, the information at music.cmich.edu. The Wind Symphony conducted by your graduate student, and I wonder, in then the selection of the Persichetti and the other two works on the program, how much freedom comes to a graduate student conductor? Because that's part of the process of what he or she is going to have to do, obviously, as they move out in the world. So yeah. how much free rein does somebody get in pulling together a program?
Well, actually, and this is likely due to my being unclear, Corey conducts the symphony band on the first half of the concert.
Ah,
the Wind Symphony is my group.
Okay.
So I trust myself nearly as much as I trust Corey. So I'm hopeful it'll go well.
You conclude with a very familiar work, In Between, another one of those ancient history to some, but very modern, a 1979 piece titled Only Light.
Yeah, well, and actually, the composer was born in 1979. Only Light was composed in 2014, or published in 2014. And this is a piece that the composer has written as an expansion of something that he wrote earlier, titled Beneath a Canvas of Green. The composer writes, at the time I was not quite comfortable with how this music fit within the larger work. It went by much too quickly. In 2012, one of his best friends had his mother lose a battle with cancer. And so he was inspired to write an expansion of that part of Beneath a Canvas of Green that represents to him hope and the development of hope coming out of a personal tragedy. And Only Light is the resulting work. It's a relatively brief piece, but the materials are also pretty brief, and so we hear a sort of call and response of some far away sounding calls, maybe even laments that then transform into expressions of optimism and hope and repose. And sort of, you know, looking forward to good things coming beyond.
An intricate work with traditional elements being done in a different way by Persichetti to this piece, and then closing with the Florentiner, the very familiar piece, a nice spirited way to send everyone out into to the audience, send the audience out from the auditorium. Maybe the musicians would go out into the audience if they're all fired up and inspired too. That'll be the close of the program tonight.
Yes, yeah. Czech composer Julius Fučík was a composer and conductor of military bands. Been referred to as the Bohemian Sousa. You know, wrote over 400 marches, waltzes, and polkas. Most notable among those was one of his first, The Entry of the Gladiators, which is also titled Thunder and Blazes, a familiar circus march. When the audience hears Thunder and Blazes, they might not know it by name, but they'll more than likely say, oh, I've heard that
mm-hmm.
before. The Florentiner is is very much in the style of the expanded European march. It's an expansive composition with multiple sections that develop one into the other and then finally overlap. At the end, it's certainly a toe tapper, and makes a nice back end bookend to opening with a Strauss polka and closing with a very very Straussian sort of march from the pen of Julius Fučík.
That's the Wind Symphony and Symphony Band in concert tonight at 7:30 at the Staples Family Recital Hall. And the two ensembles, the performingmusic.cmish.edu. And a few moments before you go, Jim, I guess to talk a little bit about the transition, the announcement of a new director of bands from the search that has been done. And I'll be honest, I sat down as we got set to do this and sort of as smoothly as possible to ask about the search and the process, and you acknowledge that it was one that seemed like it could have been almost elephant in the room status when Mr. Williamson retired, that maybe many thought that that was a position you would have wanted to be or would have aspired to be and so forth. But obviously now the selection of a new director of bands that you're just perfectly fine with.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I talked with Jack Williamson about 10 years ago about the fact that while my background is in wind band conducting, my degrees are in conducting, I have fallen in love with being a marching band director, a college marching band director. I am as connected to the Chippewa Marching Band as I've been to any group that I've worked with. And so I had to make a choice as to whether I would pursue wind conducting as the focus of my career, or if I was going to make this my job of jobs, which it really is, until I retire. And at the time, of course, you know, 10 years ago, who knew whether I'd retire before Jack, because he stayed around for a long time. But it's been since then that I've not had any desire to be director of bands. I do have had an abiding interest in seeing to it as best I can that the new director of bands will take up what is a daunting legacy. Jack Williamson was here for 30 years. Norm Dietz was here for nearly as long before him, you know, and the program, and particularly the Symphonic Wind Ensemble, have quite a reputation. And one of the reasons that that's true is that the School of Music at CMU is just a great place to work. And so I was very fortunate to work with several colleagues who were on the search committee with me, the committee chaired by Joanna Cohen-White, our flute professor, and done ably so, by the way, to go out and find our next director of bands. And with Chris Chapman, we found our man. We had a bit of an embarrassment of riches, really, at the end of the search. We had several candidates as finalists, all of whom would have been just terrific in the job. But Chris, when he was here for his campus visit, just fit the program, the place, the kids, the faculty. He just fits like a glove. He has a long and illustrious career of his own. He's well established as a wind conductor in the national community of wind band conductors, and wasn't really searching for a job. But when this one came open, he was attracted to it. Excuse me, and us to him. So we're very excited about Chris coming in, and at the same time, we've been enormously fortunate that my very good friend and colleague John Campbell was able to step in to the role of director of bands for this year. While we searched for the permanent position. This is a guy John had a fantastic career and is as highly respected a conductor and teacher in Michigan and in the Midwest and across the country, for that matter, as anyone you'll find. He was retired. And so he gave us just a great gift, which you've had the opportunity to meet and speak with John. His genuine love for teaching and for music and for CMU just flows from him. And so this has been a labor of love for him this year.
Yeah, and to come back home to the alma mater and kind of bring things around full circle.
Well, and he's been the glue that's held this thing together so that we can move forward. And CMU owes John Campbell a debt of gratitude. And I'm just over the moon for having had a year to work with him, because I don't want to date either one of us, John or myself, but you know, let's just say I have been a fan of his and a student of his for a very long time, and this has been a great opportunity for me and for our students and for our university.
And we'll look forward to welcoming Dr. Christopher Chapman as the new director of bands and have him in as a guest, we hope, in the near future. Tonight's concert that you, Jim Batchelor, and Corey Jalas will conduct, the Symphony Band and the Wind Symphony, 7:30, Staples Family Recital Hall, music.cmich.edu for all of that information about the concert. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. It's been good to have you here. Do not be a stranger. And before you know it, some of that stuff outside will begin to melt, and we'll be thinking about another marching band season approaching. Maybe send them out, and maybe they can help blow some of that off of the surfaces. That might be a good spring exercise for the marching chips as well.
There is a practice field somewhere under that glacier that's just to the north of here. Yes.
Somewhere, at least, there's a few beacons that remind us that there is a field that is welcoming students back in the very near future. A pleasure having you here. Thanks so much, and have a wonderful concert tonight. It's been good to have you here.
Thanks, David. It's been my pleasure.